What's going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode of For the Love of Cinema, a movie podcast where our motto is, we just hope it doesn't suck. This is episode 383, broken up into two parts, A and B.
A, B.
Thank you, sir, are doing double duty this week.
Double duty.
Double duty. 383A posting on 521. Why'd you say it like that? Double duty.
I mean, I don't know. I just...
Because when you say it like that, I the duty in my head is D-O-O-D-Y.
Yeah, so yeah.
Of course, it's like, you know, childish funny, but...
Huh. I mean, I picture someone taking a toozy, but, you know, it is what it is. You do your thing, I'll do mine.
Fair enough. 383A posting at 521 will be a discussion on If Imaginary Friends. And 383B posting on 524 will be a discussion on Unfrosted from Jerry Seinfeld and Netflix.
Unfrosted.
I am one of your hosts, Grayson Maxwell. Roger is gone this week, but one of my hosts, Chris... The lovely Chris Bond, I should say, is here with me this week. How's that feel when you hear the word lovely before your name every week?
I know it's true. You're just speaking truth to the peoples. That's all it is.
Truth to the peoples, plural. You're making a word plural that's already plural. I love it.
Exactly. That's how we do it.
What's going on this week, my friend? What is going
on? A lot of softball. We're at the stretch of softball season for kids. We're getting, we had our big old, where you do, they get to do their breakout song game, so the girls get to be recognized and stuff. So that was cool. Watched some movies with the family, and yeah, just been that kind of week. Been busy, getting warm, getting nice out, getting ready for Memorial Day, which is a big deal for my family.
Good. Is your daughter dominating at that sport also?
She's pretty good. There's definitely better kids on the team, but she loves the whole team aspect of it. That she and the other girls have a great time, but like. You know, they're not crying when they lose. They lose the game, they just run out screaming, having fun afterwards anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
Oh, they're just still in that phase where like, yeah, okay, all right, it's...
Yeah, yeah, they're just having a good time playing with their friends. She's playing catcher for the first time, like, the last, like, four or five games. She really likes it, so she wants to keep playing catcher. That's something that, you know, it can be taught, and she can keep doing it. But, yeah, she has a good time. Softball's good.
What if you're raising, like, a little Olympian?
Listen, my wife would be ecstatic. She is a Olympics junkie. She told me that. Yeah. She would love to go. She would love to go to just go see like the Olympic trials. Even like she loves the whole process of the Olympics and the people that compete in the Olympics. Yeah, it's like her thing.
That's pretty cool, man. Good.
Yeah. It's actually something that I think is adorable. So yeah, it's.
That's good that you have some kids that like. Want to do this stuff outside. I feel like kids today, like it's more and more of like a toss up of like, will they ever even see the sun during the summer months? Because like, don't get me wrong, I love video games, but like some parents are like a little too lenient with like the rules. Like, I mean, kids should be outside. I mean, look, I don't mean this like as a general rule for everybody, but like, in my mind, kids should be running around outside, touching bugs, touching trees, touching dirt, playing with their friends. Like, but that's what I did. And since we were young and since kids are young now, there's a whole, technology has advanced quite a bit.
Yeah, so. I did a weird. I did both. I loved video games and I played the shit out of them growing up, but and Magic and stuff like that. But I also spent a lot of time in the woods, just you know doing stupid shit out there. You know, playing capture the flag with sticks and stuff. So it all depends on. I don't know. As long as you're happy and healthy, I think that's all that really matters for kids. And then you know whatever that means for you is what it means for you.
I agree. I remember playing like at this treehouse behind one of my buddies' house. He had like a big treehouse up in the woods that his dad built, and we'd play like Lost Boys, and we'd have like imaginary guns. And I feel like that's super lame by today's standards. With kids.
I don't know. Again, I think it all depends on your friend group. I think kids find fun, no matter what happens.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So you know, if you know, like a group of kids will figure out some fun shit to do, and they'll decide if it's fun or not. So I mean. We thought that hiding in the woods and pushing each other down extremely steep hills and ravines was funny as hell. So, yeah, that's what we did. We called it capture the flag. You know?
I mean, the jackass approach is never not funny.
Exactly.
physical hurting is always hilarious.
Oh, God. After especially a whole bunch of boys, yeah.
Yeah, of course, man. What else is going on this week? Anything?
Not much more than what I already said. Going to talk about something else during one of the segments. So I mean, that'll be cool. There's a little foreshadowing, but no. Other than that, just kind of living the dream, waiting for like I said, Memorial Day is around the corner, and we have a lot of fun on Memorial Day as a family. We got friends that come in from all over the place, and we drink, we play badminton extreme style. So
do you like grill on the do you like grilling and stuff like burgers, hot dogs?
We have not yet passed the torch on Grillmaster yet. It's still the previous generation. So like my uncle, he heads most of that, and he like his generation brings a lot of food and all that. We'll bring a dish or something sometimes. Most of the time, my wife's good for that. But like we aren't in charge of like all that yet. That is not yet our responsibility. So we just still show up, drink, and do stupid shit.
Ah, okay, fair enough.
Yeah, yeah.
Always fun. Always fun on a day off too.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Chris, let's get into it since it's just
yar.
Let's get into it then. This is episode 383 of For the Love of Cinema, a podcast, not a CODcast.
Hold on. It could be a CODcast. All you got to do is ask.
It could be. It could be indeed. A podcast about movies, film, and cinema was posted each and every Tuesday and Friday at 5 a.m. on Podbean, which then distributes to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and YouTube. Each week, we start with the box office, current and upcoming releases, what streaming, trailers, and movies of the week. Without further ado, let's take a look at the box office. Here's where I just want to have a two-minute discussion. Number one, I think it could have been a toss-up this week. Apes mm-hmm. could have, again, streamed ahead, but Apes did not. Apes was number one with $35 million. Sorry, hold on one second. It was $35 million domestic with a worldwide of $59, which isn't great. But if you remember, we're talking about If a week before we normally would. We swapped mm-hmm. Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
And If to make sure that Roger could be in on the discussion next week. So the number could be much, much higher next week, which we would normally have talked about that. But
true, true.
So it's not doing terribly. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, however, with $26 million in intakes domestic, is worldwide at $237 on its second week. So
whoa, all right.
No, I just didn't
that's
expect
actually
it.
Pretty good.
Yeah, man, I'm super happy that's doing well. The Strangers, Chapter 1, $12 million domestic with a worldwide of 12. Must only have a domestic release so far. The Fall Guy, $8.5 million with a worldwide of 127. Still making some decent money. Mm-hmm. Number 5, Challengers is still up there with $2.9 million domestic with a 78.7 worldwide.
Jeez.
We talked about Challengers recently. We were generally mm-hmm. decently high on that, I guess. 6 through 10, Back to Black. Tarot, Godzilla Cross Kong, the New Empire, which is, just because I'm curious, sitting at 561, which is a pretty decent one for that.
That's all right. They're doing all right.
$500 million is okay. number 9, Blue Angels, if you remember that movie with produced by Glenn Powell and I think another huge director. That's sitting at just $1.3 million, but that's like a super niche thing anyway, I think. And Unsung Heroes, number 10. That's 19. That's not done anything, but
that had a huge drop off too, I think.
Well, did anyone really expect?
No.
I don't think that movie was expected to do much anyway, but
yeah, I don't think so.
The budget couldn't have been much anyway, so there's your box office. The only thing it would switch is If and Kingdom could have been swapped, but If, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, The Stranger, Chapter 1, Fall Guy, and Challengers. That is your top five. Any
the fact that a big movie like If came out, because I mean it has been marketed like crazy, and it's a family film, so like correct, the fact correct. That it came close to If, I think is kind of impressive in its own right, especially since Kingdom has been around, you know, at this point for a couple of weeks. So that's not too bad.
It has in the. I mean, if you ask me, I think that the advertising for Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes was, I think, a little more than Apes. It was a little more than If. I saw mm-hmm. Kingdom advertising everywhere, on every billboard okay. in Los Angeles that I drove by, everywhere, every website I visit, every YouTube video, Planet of the Apes. I didn't quite see that much for If. But I think we saw trailers longer for If than we did for Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
So maybe they chose a different kind of advertising, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But
gotcha.
Obviously, one's effective and one isn't.
We'll be interested to see how If does worldwide too, right? Because right now it's correct, only domestic. Correct. So, yeah.
No, it's worldwide, but it's not as worldwide yet. It's going to slower releasing in some territories. I didn't see that.
Gotcha.
Let's take a look at current and upcoming releases. So May 17th brought us Back to Black, If, Imaginary Friends, and The Strangers, Chapter 1. May 24th is Furiosa. Oh my God, that's next week. Furiosa, a Mad Max Saga, and the Garfield movie. We'll be talking about Garfield, not Furiosa. I'm totally kidding. May 31st, Ezra, Summer Camp, Young Woman and the Sea. June 7th, Bad Boys 4, Ride or Die, Run Lola Run, The Watchers, and we'll stop here June 14th. Pixar's Inside Out 2,
yeah,
which will be a pretty massive release, I think.
That is
Pixar.
Not that far away.
less than a month, man. Less than a month. So that's always exciting. Especially, that's your number one, isn't it?
Yes, that is my number one. Yeah. That is my number one. That is correct.
Indeed. So that's your kind of close upcoming, which is, I think we're going to try to, I'm trying to shorten that window going forward because if you listen to us every week, it's a long, you know, me smattering on about movies that won't come out for months. So
yeah.
Try to shorten that list a little bit. Let's take a look at what's streaming this week on our rotation. We're back to Netflix, back to the beginning. And I've actually checked this movie out quite a bit lately when I'm working, is The Judge by director David Dobkin, Robert Downey Jr., Robert Duvall, Vera Farmiga, Billy Bob Thornton, Vincent D'Onofrio, Jeremy Strong, and Dax Shepard. It's a feature from 2014. Here's at least for me, it matters that David Dobkin is directing this. He's done a lot of things that I really like Wedding Crashers, for example, I talk about a lot. I think with Dobkin, it's safe to say that the focus is usually on the story. It's usually on the narrative. And by usually, I mean it. All of his movies, I can see that in even like the comedies he's done, like The Change Up with who was in that? That's Ryan Reynolds and Jason Bateman. Mm-hmm. I don't think that was as successful as the studio would have wanted it to be. However, it's very obvious when you're watching that movie, the focus is on the two characters and the story. And that's why I like Dobkin. He does drive forward the narrative pretty well. And when you have talent, for instance, like Robert Downey and Robert Duvall, you're going to get an interesting mix. And what the judge is, it's Robert Duvall is a judge, and his sons, the oldest one, or sorry, the second oldest, Robert Downey Jr.'s character, is come back because the mom has passed away. And of course, there's family drama. And then they're all reflecting on a horrible, horrible crime in the past, which has been brought to the forefront by another crime that was in question committed by Duvall's character. He doesn't remember doing it, but Robert Downey's a lawyer and he's defending his dad. And of course, there's a lot of tension there. A lot of really great, really acted well scenes with heavy, heavy emotional dialogue, which is not easy to pull off.
True.
And is very often in films, even with, you know, big stars, it very often doesn't come off, I think, as the studio and or the director was hoping that it would have. But in this movie, I think it really hits. And the music is, by Thomas Newman. It's an excellent score. It's got great cast. It's one that I really liked in 2014. Chris, have you ever seen that one, The Judge?
I have not seen The Judge, but you're talking about it makes me want to see it because I love dialogue-heavy films. I love court-based dramas. It's like kind of my jam. I grew up watching a lot of Law & Order and a lot of Law & Order SVU, and I loved it growing up. So this sounds like it's up my alley. So
it's cool. I know for Roger and me it matters because it's got a very super heart wrenching scene when Robert Downey is explaining something on the stand, and sorry, Robert Duvall is explaining something on the stand, and he's talking about his sons, one in particular, Robert Downey Jr. And he somehow brought his dead wife into it, and it's super, super heart wrenching. it makes me sob up every time. It's so well written and so well acted that. It's a great little formula that movie's got going for it. So that's a good one. And you chose a goodie, man. I'll tell you what, one that we all enjoyed, The Mitchells vs. the Machines by directors Michael Rianda and Jeff Rowe, Abby Jacobson, Danny McBride, Maya Rudolph, Michael Rianda, Eric Andre, Olivia Colman, Fred Armisen, Beck Bennett all lend their voices for The Voice Talent 2021.
Oh, yeah. Mitchells vs. the Machines is phenomenally good. I just actually watched this like 2, maybe 3 weeks ago now with my kids again. We wanted to throw something on and ended up this being the pick. And this movie is fast paced. It is funny. The dialogue and the jokes come quick and it has a unique animation style. This thing is just fun start to finish, man. There are repeat jokes that are welcome, that are funny every time. There is just so much happening in this. It's colorful, vibrant. Like I said, it feels like, it feels like a comedy that got mixed in with a kids movie and like Into the Spider-Verse for its animation style. If you have not seen Mitchells and the Machines, watch this movie. It doesn't even matter if you have kids. You're going to chuckle at this damn thing. There's a lot to love in this movie. Again, there's payoffs that happen in this film that like have no business happening. And like, I don't know, like the fact that when the machines start fighting and taking over, it takes a little bit to get going. But you don't mind because even the ride to that point is just fun. It's full of laughs, giggles, and a whole bunch of stuff. And there's these payoffs that happen in this that are just great to see on screen. The ending, the last 15 minutes of this movie is just balls of the wall fun. I love Mitchell's versus the Machines. Watch this movie if you haven't. Watch it again if you have. It's just a good time. Mitchell's I'm glad I watched
Machines.
This.
Mitchell's versus the Machines is a 10.
Oh, it was like it's
very good. And I remember this. I remember that one very fond. That was like peak COVID there, and it came out on Netflix. But it was, I remember, I mean, I haven't seen it. It's been a minute since I've seen that. I may want to check that out again this week now that you mention it. But mm-hmm. I remember really being glued to it.
There's so much joke, like the Howling Monkey joke is hilarious that when it happens because it hits early, but then it comes back once or twice. And it's like perfect time. Like, the timing of comedy is good in this. And then like there's this whole legend of the mother becoming like the slayer of all robots, which is also hilarious as this movie comes to a close. It's just so good. This movie is worth every second of your time. It's a lot of fun. I like this.
I agree, and it's got a great family dynamic too.
It does.
With a secret that the daughter's carrying with her, but like they introduce it tastefully, and it's not really hammered down or anything.
It's just a part of the character.
I agree. And it's just, yeah. Especially those Furbies in the mall. Like that was so
oh God. Yeah. It's good stuff.
I just, Mitchell vs. the Machines is a 10. Like that's, I got to give you Netflix. We don't often give you credit, but we got to give you credit for Mitchell vs. the Machines. That's a damn good find.
Well, wasn't it somebody else that made it, but
Sony,
like, yeah, yeah. As I say, but Netflix made sure they bought it. So yeah, it was a good move on their part. 100%. Cause this thing is gold. I love this movie.
I agree.
I'm going to stop gushing about it. Oh, critic score on that thing is like 98 or 97 on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah. I remember it being
it's
huge.
Good.
Yeah. Fantastic. Good, yeah. good. All right, so those two are available for, if you subscribe to Netflix, you could watch other things, but also The Judge and The Mitchells versus the Machines, if you'd like to check those out. So those are two very good movies. God, I remember, I had such a good time with Mitchell. I have to rewatch that. I have to rewatch it. Such a good movie, indeed. Let's take a look at some trailers. Chris?
Yeah.
All right. I know you. This is so. If you listened to the episode last week, this trailer I saw the TV glow is the one that Chris submitted to me 9 seconds before we hit record.
True.
So, check it out this week. Justice Smith and Bridget Lundy Payne. It's a feature. What? Well, let me ask you. So why are you so passionate about this trailer, Chris? Let me ask you.
So this trailer I think is really well done. This movie, you can tell it's some sort of Oscar bait, right? This is a movie as an art form kind of deal. I feel not, you know, something that's going to be a blockbuster or is going to get a whole bunch of people in seats. This movie is for people that love a certain kind of movie, and it pulled me right in. Like, I don't know, this thing seems interesting. It seems like you have to think while you watch it. This movie seems like it's going to be at least interesting as long as it's executed properly. This reminds me of Everything Everywhere All at Once in a way, just like how much like thought like will have to be like how much attention has to be given paid to the film itself as you're watching it. I definitely think this is going to be that kind of movie, but like, I don't know. It seems dark. It seems kind of dreary and hopeless. And those are all things that are down my alley. And I don't know, like it seems sci-fi ish with some weird zonky shit going on. I don't know. This movie looks cool. This trailer got me when I saw it in theaters, and I've watched it a couple of times since because like this movie has me interested. It's a shame that it's not wide release because I would take time to go see this movie. Just even if we weren't talking about it on the show, I would want to see this one.
Well, I'm sure you can find it. Well, I'm sure you got what Drive to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, it's just a little too much with how busy things are. I doubt it'll be in theaters long either. So
it'll be on streaming in like a month and a half. So
Yeah. I'll definitely be turning this one on when it's available.
It looks something like weird. I kind of got the vibe that it was made by people who watched when they were young. Are You Afraid of the Dark? And like this
maybe
is kind of like segmented core based on that. It seems like, but maybe I'm completely missing the mark. But I did get that kind of vibe. How it was like, you remember how people got. Sometimes they get like sucked into the story and like this is kind of happening there too.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I kind of dig it for a weird. However, in the trailer and on the posters, when they start telling you like in the trailer itself, it's like, oh, this movie's fantastic. Like, I don't know. You got to.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair.
So, I mean, look, it could very well be that. Mm-hmm. But you remember the power of the power of the dog?
Yeah, yeah.
That did that also, and that won a lot of awards. So
that movie was weird.
I agree with you. Very weird. But so, I mean, look, I hope it's, if it's, we have to watch it, I hope it's fun.
Unfortunately, I don't think it'll hit our podcast, but I'm going to watch it and I'll tell you guys all about it because it's one I'm interested in. Dude, there's an image in the at one point in that trailer where like someone's face is just shoved into a TV and they're being electrocuted and someone comes in to save them. It's like, that's a weird fucking image, but it's, I don't know. It's cool.
They get the stew from Scream. They get the the fate of stew, TV pushed on them. Let's talk about Longing with Richard Gere, Diane Kruger, and Jessica Clemens feature. Why do we keep getting movie trailers from movies that were plucked out of 2005?
You think so? You think so?
I kind of do in a way. So, okay, here's the premise of this one, at least when the trailer sets up. Richard Gere meets with an ex-girlfriend 20 years, and she said that, you know, he's like, I've missed you. We had a great time. And she said, well, I was actually pregnant, and our son just died. And
damn.
So he's just finding all this now, and he tracks them down to a teacher who his son was like kind of obsessed with, and then it, like, her story seems innocent in the beginning, and then like you find out that it gets more involved, and like it's just it seems like a movie that was literally plucked out of 2006. I say that because we were doing that a lot back then. Those kind of movies were kind of everywhere, like one every couple of months. But I like Richard Gere, so I'm going to give this movie the
benefit. Me too.
And Diane Kruger somehow looks like she has not aged a day from Troy. So, I like those two actors. I think they're great. So I'll give this one a chance.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad I have AMC A-list for that, for just for this reason. But I'm actually kind of psyched for it, I got to say.
So I enjoy this kind of movie, I think. There's a couple of moments in this trailer where I was like, okay, that could be interesting to explore. There are some things that I feel like are going to be a little eye-rolly at times, but you know, at least the premise is interesting, and I don't think a movie like this is... I don't think this storyline has been done before, so this is definitely unique to this film. And I don't I think it'll be kind of neat.
I agree. I'm kind of looking forward to it in a way. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're going to watch it because it's not going to be on our radar, but I will check it out if I have time. That's saying something because I don't have a lot of time right now. So
yeah,
I'm excited. Let's talk about You're Cordially Invited with Will Ferrell. I agree, but I'll tell you why. Will Ferrell, Reese Witherspoon, Jack Brayer, Geraldine Viswanathan, and Celia Watson. It's a feature. So this is a Prime. It comes out in January of 2005 on Prime. They're already advertising it for whatever reason, but I don't. So okay, so we've watched the trailer and I didn't laugh once. Okay. So at least for me, that's a problem because don't they in trailers tend to show you some things that like are snappy, witty, funny?
Maybe. Yeah, usually. I don't know. Like the fact that they're showing this thing so early means I think they believe they got something here.
Okay.
So because they believe that, I bet this is better than we think it's going to be. However, it's a Will Ferrell comedy, and I already think I'm not going to have a great time with it. So I'm biased out the gate.
Well, Will Ferrell's hit or miss with me. I either just really despise the movie or I love it. So I'm sure this one will be no different. It looks to be like that. But maybe you're right. Maybe it could surprise us. I don't get the vibe that they're showing it early because they think they have something. I just maybe it's the vibe you get and that's great. I just don't get that vibe.
Well, I mean, I say all that and I do not like Will Ferrell. He is not my jam. I don't like his comedy. I don't like his delivery. I don't like his timing. And there were like three or four like Will Ferrell lines in the trailer, and so I'm not a big fan of what we're seeing here.
Well,
so
I booed. We've outgrown him. That's the whole thing. Is we're too old for him now. His comedy is always one. It's always aimed at, you know, adolescents and maybe like mid to late 20s.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just I'm just not there anymore.
Yeah, but okay. Hold on. Slight discussion here. All right. Quick sidebar. You say that we've outgrown it, right? But like you still like movies like you know we talked about the chances of like a Happy Gilmore 2 or something like you know what I mean?
Well, see that discussion. So, okay, you want to bring that up? But like that's definitely I want Roger to be in on that conversation.
No. Yeah, I don't want to go deep. I just use that as an example. And then like you know like your fondness for Wedding Crashers, my fondness for American Pie. I don't know if we've outgrown it in the sense of you know those things aren't funny anymore. I just think that.
Well, no, I'm talking about Will Ferrell. Like,
well, okay, but
Will Ferrell he wasn't the reason Wedding Crashers was so successful.
I know. But what's the difference of like you know, like your favorite Will Ferrell movie and the comedy then but then like turning on Will Ferrell now, it's like, you know, you still have to deal with the same style of comedy. So I guess it's confusing to me, like, you know, well, like, that's, when, like
that's
thinking
my,
about
that's
it
my
that
point
way.
Is like I like to think I've matured a little bit since I was 17. Maybe, I don't know, maybe that's not the case. I don't know.
But you still enjoy old school, you know, which has Will Ferrell in it.
But he's not a main, he is not the main character.
No, right? he's not.
There are two or three above him, which I whom I appreciate their comedy style a lot more. Like, so I mean, like, it's interesting. You chose a movie where the comedy style of Luke Wilson is much more dry, much more like sarcastic.
Okay.
So well, then, that's, you know, but like all those movies, for instance, like I try to watch Anchorman. I cannot watch it the same way I used to watch it.
My friend group loved Anchorman. I was miserable during that stint of my life with my friends, man. I think it was on all the time, and man, it killed me. It really did.
Well, Anchorman is just an example of a movie with me, with my own personal taste, it just didn't age well.
Mm-hmm.
And I watch it now, I'm like, what did I see in this movie when it came out in 2004? Well, I was much younger. I was much dumber. I don't mean that as in like you got to be dumb to watch comedy, but like I was much more like I like the slapstick approach, like, hey, you think this is funny? Like that kind of yelling to get a rise out of the audience.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe but I also think comedy has come such a long way since then too, that I don't know. Maybe this is a good B episode discussion one day, but
maybe, yeah. True.
I do think there's a difference between Will Ferrell then and Will Ferrell now, but also it's not as big of a difference as there is in how comedies are made these days.
When we watched Eurovision, weren't you in the positive camp on that? Wouldn't that be kind of the similar thing though?
I think Eurovision is one of the best things Netflix has ever done. I would put Eurovision in the top 20 that Netflix has ever. I really would. Match
no
that
way.
Thing. I think Netflix. But you know who did that one too?
Who?
David Dobkin. His focus on the story first.
Yeah, no, matters. But it's got that Will Ferrell line in comedy and all over the place. You know what I mean? So it's like, I don't know. I would be an interesting deep dive, I think. But it's like that's a bold statement about Eurovision.
I don't know why that movie sits so well with me. It just does. I mean, maybe I am a sucker, for instance, for those scenes when they have that fight. And he leaves, and she's got to walk back in the venue, humiliated. And it's that slow mo walk, and it's that song that's playing. It's a beautiful sequence, probably more beautiful than the movie deserved, but it's a beautiful sequence. And same with the Husavik, that last song is like everything going on in that is just amazing. And it's like that whole argument that they have with her and the guy from the Russian guy who's like he's gay but he's not gay because he can't.
Yeah, yeah.
Russia doesn't allow gays. It's about that's what he said.
Oh, I know.
Mother Russia, no one is gay. is when he argues that you can't hit that Sprock note, and she hits it, and like the camera, like there's this quick cutaway, like that track in on him where he's like, whoa. She hit it. It's great, man. I'm telling you, there's some real magic in that movie. I'm telling you, there is. But it's funny you bring that up because like David Dobkin made that movie. And it's
well, yeah, you know, yeah. I guess.
I would put that up there with some of the best thing that Netflix has done. I really would. Thank you for the laughter. I appreciate the laughter. I really, really.
Yeah, fair. I mean, it's just like, man. But listen, man, we like what we like, right? It's all good.
Indeed. So, I mean, is there any, just before we move on? Is there anything to say about Reese Witherspoon?
I'm never upset to see Reese Witherspoon. I think, you know, I don't think there's too many, besides the Legally Blonde thing, which I know Legally Blonde's iconic to a lot of people for a lot of good reasons. It's never been my thing. But like, I mean, I think she'll be fine. And I think she can be really funny. So
it's all in delivery. She's got good delivery.
Yeah. I'm happy to see her in a comedy. I think she has my favorite line in the, she has my favorite line in the trailer where she says something like I'm gonna kick your ass and I'm way smaller than you.
So it'll be embarrassing. Yeah.
I just
watched Ricky Stenicki, and you know, Roger and I were kind of, we were higher on it than you were, but that we were kind of divided on Ricky Stenicki as like what we thought was funny. So this is the same thing. This is a prime comedy. So we'll see how much of that translates into this one as well, because I imagine Prime makes with a lot of the same elements. They make the same movie. You know what I mean? So we'll see how that goes. But I imagine it'll be very well. I imagine we'll have similar thoughts on You're Cordially Invited than we did in Ricky Stenicky. I imagine so. But all right, those are available to watch on our social media if you have not seen them. I saw the TV Glow, Longing, and You're Cordially Invited. But is that time, Chris? Almost to the second, because it is 30 minutes since we started.
Heck yeah.
Let's talk about If Imaginary Friends. However, let's first get some particulars out of the way. So the Rotten Tomatoes on this bad boy is 49% on the tomato meter. Do you want to guess the audience score?
For If?
If.
It's probably higher than that, like 70.
87% audience.
Whoa, that's a big difference.
Which I can see, but again, you have that weird, it's super emotional. So I think there's some of that in there. People like, you know, they kind of liked it. Metacritic is 47, which I think is a tad low. I don't know how low, but I think 47 is being a little unfair to this movie. But that's just my own personal opinion. But let's talk about it, shall we?
Okay, yeah. Let's.
So give me your I gotta bring it up. So give me your quick give me your when you were walking out, what were your thoughts?
Oh, my thoughts right away. So I saw this not by myself, but with my youngest daughter. So oldest daughter has a case of the strep throat, so she wasn't allowed to go do anything today.
Oh, no.
She had to be sad. So we were gonna see it as a family, instead it was just me and the youngin'. She's six. And when this was over, I knew she didn't get it fully. I knew she'd understand, but she still had a good time, which means I had a good time.
Oh, good.
So I think If is charming enough for parents to see. This movie is actually probably directed towards adults as much as kids, actually just in more subtle ways, more nuanced ways. And I believe that they definitely had the budget to make this thing as clean as possible, because there are a lot of big names in this, and there's a ton of really good CGI in this, like very well blended. Doesn't stick out for the wrong reason CGI, and it's used pretty liberally once things get moving. So it was a breath of fresh air in that regard, because I was worried that it was going to be a lot of like small hits of CGI, small little snippets you get to see things. But no, you get long frames and long moving shots with like a lot of like the imaginary friends on screen. You get a whole music number, actually, which is actually really cool, too. So, yeah, it charming enough for the whole family to enjoy. And yeah, I thought it was pretty good. I had a good time.
Well, here I think is where I know I try to, you know, often in our discussions, I try to explain to you and Roger, you know, some movies just have a little something extra, even though it's critics won't see it. But I just think it. I'm not saying like I have more knowledge and insight than the critics. I'm not. I'm just saying, in my opinion, this movie's got a little more magic than I think a lot of people are willing to admit. But so when I was leaving, I was kind of mixed, as you know, by it was. I was looking forward to this movie quite a bit.
Yeah, same.
I really do think Ryan Reynolds, he's, I mean, not just like a funny, great actor, but he's also got this charm to him that you just can't ignore. Same with like Hugh Jackman, and like there's like 15 or 20 others that they just have this weird charm that you just kind of fall in love with on screen. It's wonderfully hypnotic. But Ryan Reynolds, and with some of the voices they had, which I thought was great. I mean, Steve Carell kills it as Blue. I like some of the other voices. Phoebe Waller-Bridge is great. We don't hear, I think there's a longer version of this movie. Not that I'm saying it has to be, but in order for some people to get the credit, I think there had to be longer or whatever payout they were given, because some of these actors are not small time.
No,
there's a lot of very big actors here.
I mean, it isn't Emily Blunt in this for a little bit?
Yes, she is.
Awkwafina, because it's an animated film, so it's going to have her in it for some reason, because she's in everything animated. It's almost like they have to. So, but I mean, yeah, I mean, Matt Damon's in this. I thought I saw his credit. Vince Vaughn, Brad Pitt, like a ton of people. I'm pulling the list
Vince Vaughn,
now.
But Brad Pitt, he's in it, but he's not. Brad Pitt doesn't say anything. I don't.
Brad Pitt is Keith. He's Keith,
the invisible.
Yeah, he's the invisible Keith. Yeah. Vince Vaughn is the dragon who has a couple of like lines and sounds.
Okay, that is Vince. Okay.
Yeah, so like you have a ton of people. I think somewhere Tom Cruise is on here as well. Like it's
no way, really?
I think so.
I watched the trailer. I didn't see Tom Cruise. Maybe I just.
I think so. Maybe particulars. Oh no, 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 no! It's Brad Pitt. It's Brad Pitt that was like, you know, somehow he was in there. Yeah, yeah.
It's funny because the credit says like introducing Brad Pitt as Keith. Like what?
Yeah. What do you mean introducing?
You want to go back 40 years in the time machine and put this movie? Mm-hmm. Then you're introducing him. I think there's a lot of interesting talent here, mm-hmm. and it's. So let's talk about Ryan Reynolds and Kaylee Fleming are the two characters that end up, you know, running around most of the time to get together. You also have John Krasinski, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, Fiona Shaw, Steve Carell, Alan Kim, Louis Gossett Jr., Liza Colon-Zayas, Bobby Moynihan, to name a few others, Catherine Daddario, Audrey Hoffman, and just to name a few. But the voice cast in mm-hmm. this is pretty extensive. I love how Brad Pitt's given a even though he doesn't like why I don't I'm not quite sure why they gave him the credit.
Wasn't he in something else that Ryan Reynolds made? It didn't say wasn't actually ever seen on screen.
Doesn't he like die in 2 seconds in Deadpool 2?
I think you're right. Yeah. Yeah.
But like that's the thing is like he did make a cameo. Like but like he doesn't say anything. You don't see him. Or maybe I missed it. Maybe Keith had one line. I never heard Keith say anything. So I don't know. But anyway, I think this movie is a lot of fun. I think there's a different reason to watch movies than Oscar consideration. I think mm-hmm. I think some people forget that. I think it's easy to write a movie. Well, it's bad. It's like, well, no, there's some magic here and there's some emotion here. At one point I was like, I'm so glad there was no one sitting around me because I was full on crying. I've had some health risks with my dad lately mm-hmm. and my mom. And it's just, of course, it stirs up those feelings with you because everyone's got, you know, people have their own experiences that they're either sharing with someone or they're going to experience or they have experience. And they just, it's an interesting way to kind of unify people because everyone has to go through this. So, yeah. But it's, at least for me, it really hit home because I've had a lot of close calls with my parents and it's like, you can only have so many of those before, you know, so it's, but the premise is interesting here. We open with a family who is very connected, very loving. You know, they're very into each other and they're very close knit. And then we find out that the mother is taken too early from the daughter and she's dealt with that. And she's still kind of dealing with that. And then not too long after you process that, you find out that the dad is in the hospital with some awful, awful illness also. And this little girl is just kind of doing her thing with her grandmother, and her grandmother's trying. Fiona Shaw is trying to make it easier for her, but still, there's another big drawbridge coming to cross. And it's just the setup here is, I think, great. And let me ask you my first question, Chris. I'm a fan mm-hmm. of this setup, where you got okay. I mean, it's kind of the Disney setup, where like the parents are dead, you know, died a horrible death, but like this, it's not the mother's gone and the dad is going. So, how do you like that as a setup for a little girl? Like just this, how the film's set up. Give me your opinion on that.
I mean, I think it's fine. I think this movie, I think one of the things about this movie that is a little bit heavier is that like it definitely is trying. It feels like it's trying to be sad, and you know, while you know, there's a room for sadness in films and sad movies. I love sad stuff, sad songs, sad movies. But I feel like you almost didn't even need Krasinski's character in this film. It's nice that we had it because we got to connect with him well because he does very good with the short screen time he has, right? Like he's very likable, he's very charismatic, so you definitely want to like him immediately. But there's a world, you know, where this film actually like just, you know, we see the mom and the dad, and you know the mom passing, you know, of cancer early, and then like, you know, we only hear that her dad's in the hospital and we never see the dad, right? So I think that the setup, while it's effective, I think it might be a little much, you know, in some regards. It's different when it's animated, I think. I think that when you have you have person-to-person acting, it's a little bit, it can hit closer to home. Like you said, it kind of tore you up a little bit. Whereas, like, for me, it did so for me, too, in the opposite way, where, you know, I'm a girl dad, right? I got two daughters. So, like, my perspective was from that of the father and what that looks like for the daughter. So, it's heavy. It can be a little much at first, but the focus of the film isn't the tragedy, right? Like
No, that's it's the opposite, I think.
Yeah, exactly. So like, it isn't the tragedy of what's happening. The focus of the film is, you know, surviving through your inner child and how that can help you, and how people shouldn't lose their connection to that, and how, you know, how that kind of plays out. So, you know, I think the setup is okay. I think it could have been a little less heavy, but other than that, it was, I think it fit.
I have a thing for the heavy, and I don't, because I have a, and it's only been recently that I've really been able to somewhat start to define that. It's only been because of the, you know, the Marvel era, that I'll call it, the MCU era, is like, I see this is when it's been so obvious that, I mean, it's kind of the point where, like, well, okay, well, I mean, there's like two conversations when you have with Marvel. It's like, yes, I think when you have it in the Marvel bubble, those are great movies. But when you remove it from the Marvel bubble and you look at it and you're like, well, these are ridiculous. There's no stakes for anyone. People just do whatever they want to fucking do. But like, that's also made me realize like how much I really appreciate film like this, especially the heavy nature of it, is there are things at stake here. And I mean, I thought the movie was doing something other than what it did, as far as what the characters were going to turn out to be. And I was like, oh, wow, here's something I haven't seen in a while. But the movie didn't do that. And because when we're talking about it relative to when we would normally have been talking about it, I want to be a little less spoilery than I would. Mm-hmm. But I thought, because the really earlier on, you are forced to ask the question, who's if? Is someone an if? Are they not an if? Whose if are they? You know, there's all kinds of these mysteries that the movie's kind of feeding you, which the movie does the movie commits the sin of like doing that thing where it's, oh, it's her. But like, you don't, okay, who the fuck is that? Like, who, tell me who, instead of just like five different characters, like, oh, it's her. Like, well, no, tell me. Yeah. Somehow tell me. Don't just keep doing this to me. Tell me who it is. Tell me why. It's important. I hate when movies do that, because it seems like it was trying to be more clever than it was.
Well, I mean, I think, okay, I'm going to say something. I don't want you to take offense to it. I think you're seeing this film from the aspect of Grayson, the viewer, Grayson, the movie buff watching this film. Whereas it's a little different for me in this regard, because I took my daughter. And so this movie has me thinking from the perspective of like a kid seeing it. I think that like the movie's trying to be clever angle makes sense if this wasn't a rated PG movie and this was a rated R, right? This wasn't meant for kids, and this is a different film altogether. But I think you need movies to have that kind of that whimsical, you know, oh moment, like that aha, that like reveal thing that is kind of clever for someone who doesn't think that far into things, that, you know, for like a kid, like a kid's point of view. Cause like my, you know, I know if my 9-year-old would have got to see the movie, she would have really been interested in the fact that, like, you know, how things kind of break down from her perspective. And my 6-year-old was just taken aback by it. Like she just didn't get it. Like she didn't see how it was even possible because, you know, of the circumstances. So it's like, I think the movie's being clever in a way that is clever for, like, you know, for like the whole family seeing it, or at least like a part of the family seeing it. And I think that we get it as adult viewers pretty quickly. There's also like two or three things that like really stand out on like what's actually happening at like different points in like the second act here. So I'm okay with what they set up and kind of like what ends up paying out. I don't know if that was like the original ending. I think maybe they had a couple things lined up and that one felt like right. But I don't think any of the characters changed positions. I just think that the way the movie ends is kind of weird compared to like how it could have gone. But I like the decisions made with the characters and who they are and what their motivations are throughout. You know what I mean? Because I think, again, it's that family movie aspect that you're thinking of. That like really gets you there.
Well, sure, and I totally understand that. I mean, it's just absolutely, you're right about how I'm viewing it. You're probably right about that, as I'm looking at it from a different lens. I mean, but like, everyone goes into a movie with a slightly
than
the person next to them. So sure,
not a wrong lens. No, what I'm saying. Yeah,
no, it's just a different lens. I guess you're right in, because I was really kind of thinking, we had a discussion last week on The Fall Guy about, in order for The Fall Guy to be better, the movie would have had to be set up a little differently.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'd never thought about it in those terms, because you're right. I think, especially when a movie like this is there is a PG version, there's a PG-13 version, and there's a rated R version. Sure, but I mean, this movie doesn't exist unless it's PG version, which is the one.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
But like, there are different ways you could like angle the story, and like, especially given who the purpose that the Ryan Reynolds character serves, you could go a few different ways with it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it'd be interesting if they went another way. I'll be honest. So I thought she slightly early on, I thought it was possible that she was someone's if.
Ooh, okay, I got you.
Because of the odd nature, and I do think there has to be a longer, maybe like a 30-minute longer, but like a 15-minute longer version of this, because doesn't John Krasinski in the hospital, and us cutting back to him occasionally to see him looking at the camera, and it seems weird if there's not more background to that. It seems kind of oddly placed.
Maybe. Yeah, I think that there was. That there might have been a few thoughts about, like, you know, maybe not. So you're thinking that the daughter is like Krasinski's like if at this point, right?
I was thinking there was a possibility of
like
that.
That's the only way he's getting through life right now, because he lost both, like, you know, like two, like, very important people to him or something like that. So like, maybe. But I think another thing that Krasinski's character could have been was already passed, and.
But
like
too many people acknowledge him. That's
exactly thing. Exactly. You know, I agree. But I think there might be a version of this movie that was talked about that was like that, because you can kind of feel those are all things that are kind of like possibly there. I think off that note, I think the grandmother is an interesting character.
I agree.
In the way of how, like, they this movie starts out with eventually they're working like a matchmaking agency. They say that direct thing in the film where they're trying to match imaginary friends that have lost their kids to new kids, but
or new people, right?
Yeah. Or
reunite with
the thing. So that's what I'm getting at, is it starts out as them trying to match them with new kids, but then at some point, unspokenly, it turns into them rekindling them with their old person, right? So it's like. I think the movie kind of like stumbled its way to that, which felt kind of weird because that wasn't where we started. And I wanted to see them explore how to I wanted to see them connect old, you know, ifs to new kids. I thought that was an interesting concept. But instead, we find out, you know, they eventually start to like try to rekindle with their old owners, quote unquote, for owners. But like, the grandmother comes in, and she's the first one that is able to be rekindled in some way to reform a connection, right?
Correct.
And that scene was interesting because she never, you know, looks, you know, like sees her if, but we can see her if, but the connection is obviously there. She taps into something that was like, you know, the spirit, you know, her childhood spirit. And it happens, you know, at least other times in this film after that. But her being the first one, and then the way this movie ends is kind of curious, because then it's like, okay, what kind of juice does Grandma Real have? You know what I'm saying? Because, like, you know, there's a point at the end of this movie where Grandma kind of, you know, after she's been, you know, rekindled or reconnects with her if, I don't know why I keep on saying rekindled, she at the very end of this movie, which this isn't really a spoiler, she acknowledges her if, like, to the if. And it's like, okay. Well, that's kind of weird, but like, is that just like some, like, you know, kind of like wink wink way for them to end the movie, you know, that's kind of fun for like everyone to see? Or is that like, you know, is there like more to that for is like the grandmother's character a little deeper, or maybe she had more story in like another version of this film? You know what I mean?
That's the thing, is like, it doesn't, I think you're right, it definitely stumbles to, it starts as one thing and then ends up as another, which but there's no real defining moment where that changes, and or, you know, the plot and characters acknowledge the change in, because that's also kind of a shift in tone as well.
It is. It is. Well, another thing is, like, I thought very strongly that all of the ifs were going to be her ifs. I thought that shoebox.
I thought that too.
Yeah, I thought that shoebox of stuff that she never wanted to look in that kind of falls out at the very end, I thought that was going to be pictures of all of those ifs that she drew as a kid. And I thought that's why it was going to be impossible for her to like introduce them to new people, because they were hers. And the whole thing became about rekindling with old ifs, right? So I thought that was going to be what ended up being she found ways to cope with her mother passing by connecting with all these ifs that she created for certain reasons. And then like her art book of the sketches of all the ifs that she was working with now was going to be like a, hey, I was a kid then and believed in these, and now I'm an older kid now, and I found a way to re-believe in all these ifs.
I think the story that they chose wasn't nearly as powerful as it could have been. And again, I hate to do that one thing, like, well, I could have made it better. I'm just saying, there's obviously some decisions made creatively that the movie was chopped up. At least given what I saw, I would imagine that so. Because you also have... I mean, you also have, not mentioned above, you know, you have George Clooney, Bradley Cooper, Matt Damon, Bill Hader, Richard Jenkins, Keegan-Michael Key, Blake Lively, Sebastian Maniscalco, Christopher Maloney, like Matthew Reese, Sam Rockwell, Maya Rudolph, Amy Schumer, like John Stewart, Bradley. What in the hell?
Yeah, tons of people.
You want to talk about a movie with the best cast list?
Yep.
If has to win this year, because like, Jesus, good Lord, man. But the point is, they didn't use any of them very effectively, and so maybe I'm wrong in like the massive payouts. Like, maybe that Christine's like, look, I just need you for a day.
Yeah, yeah.
Here's $100,000 for a day.
Well, this almost feels like a Ryan Reynolds, you know, and a Krasinski kind of like, hey, you know, calling a whole bunch of people. Hey, I need you for like one day, man. Like, can I get you in this film for a minute? It's, you know, it's about imaginary friends, and I think like, those two guys together have enough pull and can, like, because that's how Brad Pitt ends up in here, right? That's a Ryan Reynolds thing. That isn't a Krasinski thing.
No, you're right about that. That's definitely a Ryan Reynolds suggestion.
Yeah. I'm pretty firm in my belief that, like, you know, at least 40% of these voice cast picks are Ryan Reynolds saying, hey, you know, I can get, you know, so and so. You know, if you can get these other people here, I think they'll find it fun to kind of come in and do a couple voice lines and have some fun with this, you know, for kids. You know what I mean? Like, it feels like that's what it is.
I would agree with you on that one. And it's odd that they didn't have longer.
That's arcs. A lot of people, man, to give time to in a movie for kids where I think it ended at just the right time. I think if it would have went any longer. So when the movie had about 15, 20 minutes left, my kid kept on asking me what time it was, because that's when she's ready to go. Yeah. So it's like for a 6-year-old, this was a little bit too deep and a little bit too long to hold her the whole time. But my kid is ornery. But here's the thing.
I don't think it's meant for
No.
Well,
it's
okay,
meant for families.
Well, let's talk about families, but let's talk about the age demographic if you're gonna hit children. I think you're aiming for the same age that the girl is.
Well, I agree.
Ish, you know?
Yeah, I think it's more like 9 to 11, honestly.
All right, well, let's just say anywhere from, than that, anywhere from like
maybe
6, 7's a bit too young. Maybe 8.
It is.
Boring. So 9, I think they can start to really kind of understand some of this stuff. Maybe like 9 to 15, I could see really is like the target demo, and then but definitely families. I think you're right about that. I think it really works well with families. But you're not trying to not get the other people, but. That's what I don't understand is like something with the story here is if we're dealing with a story that has the potential to be like just monumentally sad and broken, the story I don't think was correct for the setup that they had.
Well, how do you mean though?
Well, because it doesn't, I don't think it jives with how things turned out with who the ifs were. And in order for the girl and the dad to both be real at the end of the film, like that was like, I'm like, oh, really? Because I think you hit it on the nose but she interacts with too many people. That's the thing.
Exactly.
Like, too many people on the nursing staff interact with her.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it just doesn't make any sense. But like, I knew because when they were walking down the street, when she was following the Reynolds character with the dancer, no one, there were several people. I think it was a point that there were several people walking on the street that never acknowledged them. Like that told you, I think, what you needed to know about that character as well.
Well, yeah, but I mean, at the same time, you know, like there's a few minutes there where you're not, where like, you know, you don't immediately think that, but as the movie plays on, there are things that happen. I think your point out's good. I think it's, you know, when the most damning part is how they both interact with their sketch pad, right? So it's like there's a point where they're doing the interviews with all the ifs before they go take it to Benjamin, the little boy. And they both clear their sketch pad, like prep their sketch pad the same exact way. Like they sit down, they wipe up, they wipe down, they pick up their pen and they spin it. Well, so it's like,
and they each use their arm to like,
yeah,
put the crease down so it doesn't start. Yep. Yeah, exactly. That's, I mean, it's meant to tell you something.
It is. It is 100%. And then like that. That's when it really like pushes the gear forward. It's like, okay, there's something else here.
And so yeah. I also want to ask. So in the beginning, so with the setup that we got, I thought it was strange that, you remember when she's in her room after we've kind of got the opening, and now we're kind of like starting to settle with where she is, everything with her grandma and her dad. Is, you remember when like the closet door kind of opens a little bit?
Yeah. In the very beginning, you mean?
Yeah. It does this weird thing where the closet door, okay, the door opens, number one. Number two, when you open the door and look around, something definitely is moving in there and making noise. And she doesn't acknowledge that. What in the hell?
Again, grandma is, I think, a part of the IF Mafia, and she knew some shit. 100%.
That's why I was so excited for the end. When, like, did she always, was she always reconnected? Like,
again, you know, it's one of those things where, like, there's things that take me out of movies, right? I think there's things that take everybody out of movies.
Okay.
This 12-year-old girl is just walking around Manhattan, New York, like, all by her damn self, and grandma don't know where she is, you know, and like she's cool with this, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Either grandma is a nutcase or grandma knows something. So it's like, you know, it's just something that the movie decided to never address because grandma's sleepy because she takes her night pills during the day. You know what I mean? Like, there's something happening.
Well, that's the thing. And when they lean so hard on the grandmother, like, okay, well, she has to know something that we don't know yet.
Yeah.
She's a part of this. I mean, especially with her if living upstairs and Reynolds' character, because like the other linchpin you want to know is when she's at the door on the third floor of the building is, who is that woman and why do they make it look like a horror film when she comes out the first
time? They really did, and I'm so glad my 6-year-old missed it because she was so focused on the fact that it was just an old lady, you know, coming out to yell at her. She didn't see the glowing eyes of, like, you know, Von Doom.
Yeah, so. Like she was still silhouetted in darkness. And who are you? What do you want?
Yeah.
It's like, why did we do that, Krasinski? I need to know why you did that.
One ring to rule them all.
Like, yeah, it's very strange. I don't understand why that creative choice is made. I mean, like, I know there's a reason for it, but like, I just, why would you have done that in a movie that you're otherwise trying to make kind of lighthearted?
I thought there would be more connection to like that moment to make it make sense. The only thing I could think of, because I did think about it for a minute, was that, you know, that woman literally has the answers that the girl doesn't want to hear. That room isn't an apartment for somebody else. That room, you know, doesn't have her, you know, this other tenant in here that, like, no, like that woman, if she reveals early enough, could break the whole premise of the movie and like the psyche of this girl and like what she's doing, right?
You mean if the room is revealed?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So this woman is kind of like it's almost like a hoop that like a kid's brain jumps through to like protect itself, right? It's like, oh no, this woman's bad, and like, you know, it creates like this mini story of like, you know, she's an evil witch with glowing eyes, so like, you know, she runs from her instead of like, you know, her brain letting her go, oh well, she's gonna open this door and there's gonna be nothing behind it. So, well,
I mean, that's the reason why the woman is portrayed like she is, because we're seeing it from the little girl's point of view of like, oh, here comes an evil person trying to stop me from, you know, that's why we're seeing it the way we see. I get that. It's just that is a bridge I think a little too far that I would have gone, because they didn't really draw attention to it otherwise. They kind of let it kind of waller, or they kind of let it just.
Well, they mention her two other times, like the Reynolds character mentions her again.
Sure. But again, so. it's I would have handled it differently. Not saying I'm better, just different. Not saying better. So do you have any other kind of wildish, outlandish theories before the movie ended?
Nothing else. Like once you start seeing, like I said, like some of the clues fall into place about, like, you know, like Reynolds' character and stuff, the guesses kind of go away because you kind of get what's happening. I think it fits the premise of the film, though. It's all about rekindling with your childhood. That's what the whole idea is. And that's what it turns into when, you know, they're trying to reconnect with the ifs with their old owners. And it makes sense because that's what she's doing the entire time. And that's something that got her through a tough time in the past. And it's she's preparing herself to get through a tough time in the now. And I like it all does fall into place. And I think it falls into place nicely. I think that while, again, this movie does do a really, it tries real hard to make you cry. Like, it's, it ain't hiding that. The music is like hard trying to hit you in the feels, right? Like the music is coming for you. And that combined with the other things in this movie, there were misty eyes in my theater. I saw one and heard another grown man crying, right? So it's like, you know, this will hit parents. It will. And, you know, and even non-parents like yourself, it's just the movie is a little heavy handed in that regard and doesn't hold it, you know, hide its hand. But I think the movie does what it's trying to do, and it's effective, and it looks good while doing so. So
it does look
this. The CGI could have looked real bad. Instead, it looks real good. The musical number in the middle of this thing is out of this world. Awesome to watch. So I thought that was fantastic. And I don't like musical numbers in my movies, even my kids' movies. So like to, for that to be entertaining and imaginative and like cool to see, that was an achievement. I think that's in the positive bracket.
I agree. And it's only a few minutes. It doesn't really overstay its welcome. It comes it and goes. But it also has a reason for being there, which I think is important too.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you. One of my great, you know, admitting here is I also kind of, and unless I'm really into sitting down and watching a musical, I'm like, ah, are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. In this movie, get this out of here. But I mean, it worked and it fit well. I think there wasn't much wrong with that, and I don't. But it does serve a thematic purpose, which also I'm happy for too, because otherwise it would have seemed way more out of place.
Mm-hmm.
Had it been there. But so let's talk about some of the CGI then for one second. As you've already said, it looks great. I also think it looks pretty fantastic. And there had to be tons of money spent on CGI, right? That's the theory.
The budget for this film is high. It's $110 million.
Oh my gosh. I hope. I don't have a problem. I know it's only made 50 something back.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of worried that it's not going to.
It probably won't. Basically, this thing has until what? It has until Inside Out 2 hits.
Well, so, yeah, and then Inside is just going to eat its lunch.
Well, but that's what I mean, though. It's got about a month to run, right? So if it doesn't fall off too sharply after week two will be the usual sharp fall off, right? But then after that, if it can maintain week 2/3 numbers until its fifth week, it'll hit that 110 at least, and probably hit like the 150 mark, but it's gotta hold pretty steady.
But also something like this on streaming will do excellent as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely it will, but that's not where most of this money's made.
Well, no, but I mean that's something that we never take into account when we're talking about. It's only been a thing for like the last 15, 20 years is like streaming has to be a thing now, right?
Yep.
Of course, so that's agreed. I thought it looked really good.
Oh yeah, it did.
And so if the room, so what's real and what isn't in this film then?
What's real? Everything except for, I mean, we're talking about hard spoilers for some of this, but like everything is real except for the room that she visits and the imaginary friends that she interacts with, right? Like everything else is real. Maybe not the amusement park place that she goes to, because like that's like a safety hazard that like has a guard probably there somewhere, right? But other than
I was going to ask you about that, because like I mean, again, had this not been a PG movie, a PG-13 or higher, we would have gotten more of the. Well, maybe it's not real because that's not possible.
Yeah, because
it's PG and about a kid's imagination, we kind of forgo all that stuff.
It's funny to think about, like, okay, so if this was really happening and she's walking to this place, then the whole time she's in her little imagination trance, is she just sitting on the ground rocking back and forth looking like she's stoned out of her gourd? Like, what does this look like logistically from a realistic standpoint? You know what I mean? Yeah, it's funny to think about those things. And same thing with grandma, right? Like, is grandma just like following her around, make sure she's not getting kidnapped, or is she just letting her 12-year-old granddaughter walk around the streets at night? Because like she goes to the corner store at night which
yeah, by like several blocks away because like, she's walking for a while.
Yeah, I don't think I'm sending my kid, my 12-year-old in New York to the corner store. It's just not gonna happen.
No.
Like, you know, and maybe I'm a protective parent for that, but like it's like that's a little bit too far for me to think about. You know, but if you grew up in New York or, you know, maybe you're like, nah, it's fine. You know, go talk to Two-Eyed Timmy down the road, you know,
Timmy.
Whatever. You know what I mean? Buy me a lotto ticket, a pack of smokes. You know, like, I don't know. Like,
wait, Two-Eyed Timmy, how many eyes do you want someone to have?
Listen, both eyes aren't in the same place. It's, all, right, it's, all, it's all you got to know.
That's fair. Much just, like one of our characters. Yeah.
It's just stuff like that. You know what I mean? But, you know, in the end, this is a kid's movie. It's a it's a family film that centers on the imagination of, you know, of a little girl. And it's a like those things in mind. This is the movie we got. You have to be OK with the fact that this girl walks around at nighttime and in the middle of, you know, New York and, you know, is fine and is completely safe. And you got to be OK with she's probably breaking and entering into some amusement park, you know, or. You know, and doing weird shit with no one around in the middle of the night. You know what I mean? It's just, it is what it is. Because the movie that you see on screen is the experience you get. And that's what's important for the family film side of things.
Well, sure, sure. And I totally get that. But however, the logistical side of me wants to, like, the movie didn't
answer. Wants answers, right?
Well, the movie didn't answer any of those questions. Like, it didn't show me what she was doing when she was experiencing all this, where she actually was. I mean, for all the movie does is show us the room. Mm-hmm, and, like, yeah. Well, she saw the room differently because... You know,
yeah, but she never made it in, right? So she's just sitting outside that door, rocking back and forth. Like I said, like either she's not up there at all, or she walks up there and stands by the door, has a whole thing in her head play, and then goes back downstairs. You know what I mean? Like it's
yeah, because her imagination makes it something more than it is.
Yeah, there's a lot happening here that you like. This is heavy suspension of disbelief, but at the same time, it's like yeah, but it's moved by imaginary friends you can see. So you know, good on you, stupid kind of deal. I guess you know what I mean.
That's fair. So let yeah. We also got, didn't the her tragedy also was a big mm-hmm. part of why she could or couldn't see the ifs and when she couldn't see them.
Mm-hmm.
So when this whole thing plays out, did you not think when? So the whole thing with her was I'm not a kid anymore. That was her yes. thing in the beginning. Yeah. I don't treat me like a kid. I'm not a kid. And then in the end, she's like, well, I'm a kid.
Yep.
I now understand that I am a child that still is, you know, should live to be a child. Is so how come she gets to do that? How come she can still see the ifs when she's forgotten everything and just started to try to grow up? Why can she still see everything?
So
even though she doesn't want to.
I mean, that comes back to I think like the idea is it's her mind's way of protecting itself, right? It's like she's about to go through this thing again, so her brain goes into defense mode and regresses back to a point where she found a safety mechanism within that time, a coping mechanism. That's, you know, that's where she's going. If you pay attention to the ifs that we have that we deal with, like some of them are probably her creation, you know what I mean? At least one of them are, right? So it's like, you know, You have the whole ice thing, which is glass half, like the glass is half full if you put it, you know, if you drop an ice cube in it, you know what I mean? Because it gives it more volume. Like it's a lot of this is like, you know, her brain's, you know, going back to a time that, you know, was to like defend herself from another tragedy. And the idea is that, you know, like being connected to your child self is, you know, something that is good for the soul. I think that's what it comes down to.
Sure, and I'm like, yeah, I totally understand that. However, the messaging is kind of wonky when it comes to like how things actually happened.
Well, yeah, but you know, it is what it is.
So let's talk about the bear. I think Louis Gossett,
Charlie.
Yeah, I think that was him, the Louis Gossett Jr. Yeah. Let's talk about the bear then for 1 second.
Yeah,
of how he's kind of we're looking at him as like he's the like administrator of this play, of this magical mm-hmm. place she goes. He's the one yeah. that like is in charge of all the paperwork, and he's the lead. He's the head honcho, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's the PG version of Ted.
yeah.
That's kind of what I thought. But I loved when he took her and he explained on the pier how everything was going to go. And so in logistically, when you say like, oh, so she's rocking back and forth from that door. Was she just sitting on the bench, rocking back and forth like an idiot at night on the boardwalk?
I mean, she's sitting on that bench talking to no one. So if someone walks by, they think she's wildly crazy. You know what I mean? But
sure. But like at night yeah. on the boardwalk.
I mean, I'm telling you, grandma got some splaining to do.
She does. That girl can too easily traverse the apartment key system to get, like, you know, just, why do you give her a key? Just lock the door and tell her she can't go anywhere. A 12-year-old in New York. Come on, man. But there's like a weird kind of magic. That's what I was talking about. The magic is, there's a weird kind of magic there that it just all works if you don't think too deeply about it.
Well, yeah, no, but you know, it's, I don't know. I talked about Mitchell's and Machines today. Like, you know, if I think about my, you know, my, everyone's iPhone taking over the planet, you know, it's like, that's a wild thought, right? But like, you know,
I don't think it's as wild as you think. I don't think it might be, but
I had fun with that movie. You know what I mean? Sure. So it's like, it's the same thing here, right? Like, at a certain point, you know what you're in for. You know what you're going to see. You know, you saw the trailer. You know what I mean? So it's like, you know, you know what you're going to watch. And that's what it's about. It's about the experience, you know, whether that you get from the film or that you get with your, you know, from, you know, watching the movie with your family.
Sure. But it's a movie. Do you remember Christopher Robin? Did you watch that? I know we've talked about it recently on the...
We've talked about it, yeah. No, I did not see Christopher Robin.
Or, like, but there's also that question of, like, well, is he or isn't he experiencing this stuff? Like, what, well, I mean, and what isn't?
I think the closest thing for me is Hook, right? Like, Hook is all about, you know, that refinding your imagination. Like, it's the same thing, right? This is just this generation's version of it, maybe.
Hook! Bangarang! Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Bangarang.
Rufio! Maybe.
Yeah, Rufio! God, that's a good movie. Spielberg
it
movie.
Is. Really is.
That's got some magic to it, too. A different kind, but that's got some of the same kind of magic that I'm talking about. It's like, it just works and it just... Sometimes you don't need to explain why, but it's just everything. All the elements fit together and just work much better than this movie does. Let's be honest. But there are some things here I think that still do work in a way that you could walk away from this with a very pleasant experience, and you know, not like, oh yeah, I really dug that kind of kind of way. If that makes sense too.
It does. It does.
So your six-year-old was completely tuned out by the time...
She wasn't completely tuned out, but she was ready for the movie to be over. But, like, you know, she was also engaged, right? She, you know, in the beginning of it, she wanted to know where mom was. And I was like, well, she was really sick. And she went, oh, she passed away? I'm like, yeah. And, you know, she went, oh, well, that's sad. And then she watched a little bit longer and she went, is the dad going to pass away too? When, like, the dad was in the hospital, it was like, she was worried, you know what I mean? And it's like, so she was engaged and, you know, she laughed at, you know, the funny stuff that happens and, you know, she had fun with what was on screen. It's just that, you know, for the seriousness that the film takes near the end of it, you do lose that younger audience, I think, because it does kind of get very much into the emotional side of things, you know? And I think that's hard for, you know, kids that, you know, meet it by a certain age. So it is what it is.
Sure. And I totally understand that. That's just,
yeah, she had a good time with it though.
Well, good. I'm glad. And you, would your other daughter, you think of appreciate your older daughter?
I think my 9-year old would have liked it much more because she would have, she's in that, that Disney like TV show, not animated stuff. Like she's in that phase. So like, you know, she's into like, you know, like seeing real people do like, you know, wild imaginative things, so this would have been up her alley. So we'll definitely watch this as a family once it's on streaming.
It won't be long. I mean, I'll bet you before the end of the summer, it's definitely going to be on streaming.
Yeah, it'll be on Paramount Plus, right?
I imagine. Most likely. So. Is that?
Yeah.
I didn't catch the studio that did.
It's a Paramount film. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Paramount. Okay. Fair enough. So yeah, there's some things I would have changed. Again, by the end, I was thinking that Krasinski wasn't going to be. I think you hit the nail on the head. Is I think the minor change would have been that he was gone already and the nurses never say anything when she goes into that room because they don't want to just like, they just want to let her cope.
Yeah.
But also like hospital, there's no way hospitals would have not filled the room the next second.
Well, like the scene you could have had then at that point was she comes through and like, they don't stop her in time and she walks into that room and someone else is actually there. Right. And then she has to, you know, like that's like the end of act two where she has to like deal with that shit or the beginning of act three. So it's like she really starts unraveling like all the things around her. I don't know. I'm rewriting the movie now.
That's a whole different kind of movie though.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the PG-13 version, right? You know what I mean? Sure. Like, yeah. Yeah. So,
yeah. It also becomes a way different tonally. You know, like that's a different shit.
Yeah.
I really did dig this. I'm glad that it was. I want to see the full version. I'm telling you, there's a, I don't, I don't think there's like a 4-hour version of this, but like there's definitely like a 10 or 15 minute longer version.
You need the Snyder director cut version of this, is what you need. Is that what you're saying?
I need the 5-hour version of If. Yeah, absolutely. You know, so and I wanted to ask you this too. I did find odd satisfaction with the how they chose to end with reconnecting all those people with their ifs.
Yeah.
Like again, like that wasn't how the movie started, or what, or like the weird kind of partnership agency that they formed with like repurposing ifs with kids that need them. Maybe is I really kind of did dig that with, I mean, because it's a comfort thing for that's like the comfortable way to end that movie. That's the feel good way to end that movie.
It is, and like again, like we didn't ask for it, right? Like I didn't expect it, but then like. The movie just kind of like dumps it on you at the end. It's like, you know, hey, the movie's over, but look at all this for a minute. Like, it was like, okay. You know what I mean? It's kind of odd, but I'm glad we got it because I think it's cool. Like, that leaves, you know, less to be to like ambiguous because, again, I thought maybe she was making up all those ifs herself. So the fact that, like, we get to see they're connected, but it was just so weird for it to start out as, like, the, you know, find your new kid thing to. No, we're just going to reconnect you with everyone that's, you know, that you've already known. That was the weird thing for me. But
it's also, but also, how do you, and maybe maybe the thing with all the important people, or sorry, all the big names that were that had like three or less lines. I mean, George Clooney said literally one line of dialogue, I think.
Yeah.
Spaceman said one thing, and that I was like, wait, is that George Clooney? And sure, shit, it was. But Bradley Cooper had more to say about the Ice Cube, and he was pretty vocal. But he was one of the ones that had more. But I wonder if, because they made a big deal with the TV and the movies that they were watching in the beginning. You remember with the grandma?
Yeah.
Is maybe like she just, movie stars were the voices of the, maybe that's the whole point there. But I mean, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But that's the whole thing is I thought it was kind of a waste of A-level talent that you didn't really have to waste.
Again, I mean, I don't think it's wasted. I think that if they wanted to do it, they did, because that's what this feels like. This feels like a, hey, come be in this movie that's for kids kind of deal. You know, that's all that is. Yeah, and they happily did so. They happily did so.
Well, the big paycheck, I'm sure, doesn't hurt. I'd like to see the finished version of this. I'd like to see the longer version of this, because it's just, I don't think it makes a lot of sense. Like with the, because we, for instance, one of the things I'm talking about is like we see when she's on the pier with the bear, and then they walk off stage left after they get up from the bench, and then they come back in the forefront. She's wearing the white suit, and the bear's got something on, and then that's when they go in. I think they walk through like some pretty extravagant stuff on the pier. But then the next thing we get is Krasinski's character in the dad in the hospital looking at the video camera with his wife wearing, I think, the same thing that the daughter was wearing. So the daughter's just pulling from memories that she had with the family at the time at the same location.
Yeah, which is where the bear comes from too.
Sure, and I totally understand that part of it, but there seems to be a less clumsy way to do that.
I mean, I don't know if it's clumsy. I think it's good enough, I think is the way to put it.
Yeah, I guess you're right. This movie doesn't exist unless it's the PG version, because then you lose the child aspect. You lose the very young child aspect of this. But
yeah.
And then you lose like the Steve Carell, like, beep, 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 beep. Like you lose all that funniness that the kids kind of dig.
Was that funny though?
I mean, yeah, the kids dig it. Yeah.
I didn't find it as charming as I think a kid would have, but sure. But it's still Steve Carell doing what Steve Carell does best. And there's nothing to say about that. So as we move into the scoring phase, any final comments before we move into the final thoughts?
Just that, you know, all the things that we can say about this film, it's still a solid family film that I think does some cool things with its budget. So I was happy to go see it.
I agree. I like Krasinski more and more. The more of the stuff that he makes, because I really dug the first two Quiet Day films. Or sorry, A Quiet Place.
Quiet Place, yeah. Yeah. Quiet Day.
A Quiet Day, listen. Just someone sitting at a desk doing a paper.
It's all I need is a quiet day.
I like what he does, Krasinski.
Yeah.
He's got a good eye for storytelling.
We need more creative minds to be in this process, because otherwise we're going to get a lot of really bad AI stuff in the next 10 years. We need people that are creative and passionate to make movies. For whatever reason, they want to make films and TV shows and all that stuff. Because if we lose that, then we're gonna lose a lot of value in the time we spend
Well, I think studios disagree with you because they AI is cheaper and they don't have to pay the actors.
Yeah, I'm not fake. I'm not talking about studios. I'm talking about people.
I agree that we got to have maybe like the younger director step up and start doing things like this. And yeah, he's really on my radar now, and that's something to say because like not many directors are on my radar as much as he is right now. And like he just really kind of wormed his way into my heart with some stuff. But yeah, I really dug this. I don't think it's great, but I really had a good time with it. And I was, at one point, ugly crying. Like, I was like full on. There was tears streaming down my cheek, and I was using the napkins to sop it up.
I got misty eyed for a second, but at like the wrong spot. It was weird for me, but again, like I don't know. I think emotion hits everybody, and like. In like ways that are like relatable, so I understand what you mean. So
I thought for sure when she walked in the apartment and the grandma's like, "Get your stuff, we got to go. Your dad, you need to see your dad." I thought for sure.
Oh no,
he was COVID. Like, I thought like, oh well, this is like Jesus. They've done to this poor girl? They've taken everything from her.
This thing is a dark turn.
Well, but then you also have that wonderful ballet scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
with the reconnecting of the if with the grandmother too of like. God, that was beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Poetic and just gorgeous. And I just, it was like this movie was made for
you. You heard it here first. Grayson Maxwell, into the older ladies.
I mean, sure, why not? But that whole scene with they use the outside lights, obviously not street lights, punched up.
Oh, no, yeah, God.
Yeah. Like, that was a beautiful sequence.
Could you imagine living in New York and having those lights exist? There's no way. So those would have been shot out day three that they were up.
Of course, of course. No. Like, as for like the cohesion of the universe, it had to be what it was. But
yeah.
Just gorgeous scene, man. It's just awesome scene. Really kind of emotional and just very well thought out. But so I'll go ahead and score it first.
Okay, go ahead.
As you remember, this was one of my most anticipated for the last sequence also, or for the last couple months also. But I really was looking forward to this, and I think it has a lot to do with Ryan Reynolds and the imaginary thing and how I thought they were going to, you know, really drive home a message. And I didn't get the movie I thought I was going to get, but I'm really happy with what I did get. That being said, this to me is a 5.
Okay.
I want it to be higher. I just don't think I can justify the 5.5 or the 6 because I just don't think there's as much cohesion as there needs to be in a movie like this. And I'm not. You remember? I mean, for some odd reason, you remember watching Clifford?
Yeah,
like 2 years ago, how that movie like zero things made sense.
Yeah, the movie was dog shit. Just,
but this movie,
pun intended.
Thank you. But this movie wasn't that, and it's very watchable, and it's, you know, if you get a family that wants a nice afternoon just to have some laughs and some feels together, this movie will do the job.
Hmm.
It's a very capably made well movie by someone who I is now on my radar for good, and it's I was very happy. So a 5 is, I mean, I'm kind of like both begrudgingly and very happy to give this a 5 because this could have been a lot worse too.
True.
This could be a 2 or a 3, but I'm very happy to give it a 5.
Gotcha. Okay. I'm actually higher than you on this one. I think it's just from the fact that like I'm not. It's not that I think you're being too critical of If. I think that I'm being less critical of the things that don't make sense because I know the kids movie has to happen. Kid movie is going to kid movie, right? And then I think all that wrapped together. I think this is a 6 for me. It's not out of this world great. It's not fantastic, but I think this is better than Clifford. You know what I mean? Like, this is better than what a family movie can be sometimes. This is better than Animal Crackers, another Krasinski film, right? Like, this is way better than that attempt at something for kids. This is really good. This is acted very well. This has a lot of just visually eye-catching stuff that is fun to see on screen. And even though Steve Carell is absolutely annoying as shit at times, and even in this film, I think that his character as Blue is actually kind of endearing to see on screen, and along with the rest of the cast, this is a 6 for me. This is an easy, solid, recommendable family movie for anyone that's thinking about seeing it already.
I agree. I think it's an easy one to score in that kind of like the anywhere from 4 to 7 or four to 6 range.
7 might be a little high. Yeah,
I misspoke. Anywhere from the 4 to 6 range, I could definitely see If falling.
Yeah.
It's not you know, right in there somewhere. I guess I wanted a more emotional. I'm kind of upset that the dad survived.
but you said it yourself, and I'm going to quote, I cried like a bitch. You know what I mean? I did
ugly cry quite a bit. But because I was expecting, like, it made more sense to me if he wasn't, if her coping mechanism was keeping him there longer for whatever reason to help her deal with the mom. And then,
yeah.
And then she can, you know, and the ifs were there to help her deal with the loss of her dad. Like, that's what I was thought we were going with this, especially with he was so like you said it, he was so charismatic and charming with that when he was dancing with the IV thing and the nurse was in there. And it's just, I really thought if you remove the nurse, then that could absolutely be the case because no one else saw it. We never saw him interact with anybody else. Mm-hmm. So that could have absolutely been the case. So I'm just saying, I think there's a better movie here if you make a few little changes. But
gotcha.
I was very happy to see again something was on my list. So all my stuff came early in the few months though. But
yeah.
So 5 and a 6 is very respectable.
No, it's good. Like I said, this movie's fine. This is, you know, this is an easy, you know. Oh, you're thinking about seeing If? I thought it was really good. You should probably go see it. You know, like, that's an easy thing.
I agree. Well, thank you, Chris, for joining me for this episode 383A of For the Love of Cinema, a movie podcast. Each new episode posts every Tuesday and Friday morning at 5 a.m. on the podcast service of your choice of the following 6. Apple Podcast, Podbean, Google Podcast, Spotify, Amazon Music, and now YouTube. Please leave a comment or 2, rate, subscribe. Every little bit helps. More importantly, thank you for listening. Check out the show on Twitter at Love Cinema Pod. I am at Grayson Maxwell 1.
I'm Christopher Bond.
No Twitter for you.
No Twitter.
No X. No X.
Yeah, no X.
Don't forget to check us out on Facebook. Always posting things on social media. Send us an email to fortheloveofcinemapodcast@gmail.com. And next week, a lot of apes in the conversation. We're talking about the A episode, talking about Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, and then the B episode is going to be our thoughts on the Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes and how it cohesive with the other Planet of the Apes films.
Talking about the kingdom in its entirety? Yeah.
Yeah, baby.